in the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now,
now we're time to do the right thing.
Yes, let's do it right. Stop the fussing and fighting. Concentrate on our liberation. And this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. I'm here at the Black Radio Hall of Fame, live at Harris Stowe State University, St. Louis's own HBCU. We are going to be on the battlefront today, and as we often talk about, sometimes our guests are on multiple battlefronts. We are connecting the struggles of our people, whether they be in housing, whether they be in police accountability, workers' rights, women's rights. We are connecting the dots right here in Voices from the Battlefield. I have two guests today, and they are special, and the connector between these two guests are the 13th Amendment, and you understand a little bit more about that, and we've dubbed this show The Cotton Picking Truth About Slavery. So we have Timothy Arden Smith. He's a filmmaker for over 30 years. He has his own production companies. And I must say that if you don't know a filmmaker or a person who's documenting our struggle, they have a very special place, because if you don't have somebody who's a high roller that's banking your idea, it is a very treacherous road from an idea to a finished product. So we have to give our props to our filmmakers. So welcome, Timothy Smith, to Voices from the Battlefield.
Hi, and thank you very much for having me on.
Good to have you. The other guest is David Love. David is the executive editor for BlackCommentary.com. He's a fellow commentator, as most of you know, I write for BlackCommentator.com. He's also a commentator. He's a journalist. He's an advocate. He's also a professor at the University School of Communication and Information. And so, welcome, David Love.
Hello. It is a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me today.
So, you know, I was thinking about the two of you all, and so we had a nation that, you know, David would be Minister of Information and Timothy would be Minister of Culture. So you just looking at you all's credentials, of course, I just did a snippet, but it's just so many layers there for the both of you all. But we're going to dive into our topic for today, and I'm going to start with you, Timothy, because I think it's going to make sense when David brings his piece in. Why would we even be talking about slavery in 2021? And this is often a question that non-black people ask us, like, y'all still talking about slavery? And then the answer should be, because it's still going on. So, Timothy, tell us about your product, and I have admit, when you and I talked, that I found it accidentally when I was searching for some resources for young people, and the name of it is A Cotton Picking Truth about slavery. And so tell us about why you did it, and then just give our listeners a little bit about who are the targets of the documentary and why.
Okay. All right. Well, the complete title of it is Cotton Picking Truth, Still on the Plantation. Still on the Plantation has got to be kind of significant because it is a truth, and then when we found out we're still on the plantation. But let me preface this. A documentary, other than what we have been, what the narrative have been, we've been given about documentaries. Documentaries are supposed to be completely biased, non-biased. So when we do our documentaries, we do it as a filmmaker, and so we don't take sides with it. We usually have the people tell the stories. So you may have one side of the story told by this amount of people, and you may have the other side of the story told by these people. And our thing as filmmakers, as documentarians, brother, is to let the people tell the story. None other than a lot of these famous documentaries out here. I'm not going to mention any names, but there are some famous documentaries out here that slants it their way. Maybe something like Bowling for Columbine or something like that. It steers it to the person their way. So a documentary is not supposed to be about that. Just like the news. You got Fox News, who I used to work for a long time. They steer, and I just tell you, they told lies when I worked for them. I got paid to tell lies by working for Fox News because I was under contract, and it's just like any other job. It's like either you quit and then you don't get fired. You don't get paid if you quit. So you're stuck in the middle. So you got to keep getting paid, especially when you were a single parent. I was a single parent, or when you're a parent, regardless. So I'm not proud of it, but that's the way it was. So getting back to the point, a documentary filmmaker is not supposed to take a side. They're supposed to be straight down the middle. And with that also being said, there was another thing brought up. My son just got into a thing with Talib Kweli. I don't know if y'all know who he is. He's a real hip.
Yes, we do.
My son, Talib just accused my son of hating. We don't believe in hate. If somebody used the word hate, hate is a very strong word, number one. It's one word, very small, very powerful, very, very wrong. So if anyone hates, then we move away from you. We don't have anything to do with you because you are on a very negative, a very dark, a very evil being, energy. And that's not what we're about. So my son got emotional because Talib was one of my son's most favorite hip-hop artists. And for Talib to come to my son and to accuse him of being full of hate without my son saying he hated anything, it really hurt my son. So I'm saying that is just to say, so some people may look at this documentary and the first thing they feel is, which is the same way after we edited it and did everything to it, and we finally took the first look at it. As a black person, you're gonna feel angry. You're gonna feel very angry, but trust me, we don't feel hate. Because if you hate, then you become a hateful person and you become the same thing that you're against. So you're not full of love anymore. Love and hate, you know, it can't exist in the same place.
So, Tim, why don't you talk about why people would have that reaction? Because we both have a certain reaction, and I know I did. But give our listening audience a taste of what it is about so that you could see why somebody would have that kind of visceral reaction.
Okay, yep. So thank you for asking that. So getting to the second point, the reason I said that was because, let me get to the beginning. So the way the film came about, I was producing a radio show, Radio One, and we had a guest on. And I put the guest on, but, you know, I would put a guest on and I would be moving to the second and third on down the line. And the guest that was on was Mae Louise Miller from Mississippi. She's passed now. And she was on the show talking about that she was a slave in chattel slavery until the 1960s. She didn't know the exact dates, but she knew it was in... Excuse me, but her and her family traced it back to the 1960s before they were moved to Alabama and they became free, completely free, well, somewhat free. And so my son was listening to the show. I wasn't even listening to it. And he came back and was like, "Dad, that's a documentary you've been wanting to do forever. And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He was like, "Listen." And I was like, "How?" You know, we didn't have the cameras at that point, you know, which are expensive. You know, just the reduction of everything is expensive. He was like, "Well," my son was like, "I'll put up my money." And I was like, "That's your money, you know, that you're going to use for your musical career." He was like, "Nope, this is important, Dad. We got to do this documentary." I was like, "All right, let's do it." So everything fell into place just financially. So when we went, so we had to go to Mississippi and Harvard and a lot of different places to do the documentary, D.C., the Capitol, and everywhere. But when we went to Mississippi to talk to Mae Louise Miller, so I went down there with my mind, I'm going to find the truth and going to find that she's not telling the truth. That was in my mind, you know, as a producer in me, news producer. And we went down there, and so she was like, "Honey," you know, she has this accent. She's
yeah.
Like, "Honey." She was like, "I can show y'all." She was like, "And I can show y'all where," and I guess she knew that she's very smart, though. She said, you know, I guess she figured I was trying to pin her up. She said, "I can show y'all the barn to where we were being enslaved at." I was like, "Okay, bet. Take us to it." We went to the Mississippi Delta. Now, to show how ignorant I was about the Delta, I'm thinking that the Delta was down by the Gulf of Mexico. The Delta runs, it's in like the middle of Mississippi, and it goes through the Arkansas. You know, so it goes through a couple of states, and it's the Delta. The Delta is not like at the Gulf of Mexico. So she took us there, and everything that she was telling us about became true. So I was like, okay, people are not going to believe this, what we're seeing, because it was showing some, and what she was talking about was like when she got raped as a little girl, I mean, underage, young little girl, and that really pissed you off. That really makes you angry. That's so getting back to the point of what makes you angry. And being enslaved, like, the United States was built on slavery. That's a fact. So you're going all the way back, and it's still here today, still on the plantation. The cotton picking truth, still on the plantation. And it's important you put still on the plantation, because you may put the cotton picking truth up, and a lot of other things may come up nowadays. So if you want to watch it on Amazon Prime, which it will surprise me that Amazon Prime put it on their platform, but they put it on their platform, and so you have to put the cotton picking truth still on the plantation, my little thing.
No, that's real, and we're going to plug that, because I think we actually did pull it off of Amazon Prime, and we showed it to a room full of young people, young adults, and literally when that sister was giving her testimony, you could have heard a pin drop in the room. So it's very compelling. There was no doubt in our minds that she was telling the truth. But I think the thing for most of us is, how could this still be happening in 1960, whatever? And the documentary is not new. I think it was like, what, 2009? So the fact that it's still out there, I think, points to the longevity of the issue itself. So, you know, this woman is telling us in her own words what it was like to be enslaved, her whole family, and not to have food. I mean, literally, they were starving, not to have sufficient housing. They basically slept on the floor if they had hay. Or I remember her saying that her father's stomach was their pillow. I mean, he had to be the pillow. That's how bad it was. And then all the whole rape thing. And, you know, it's just like all of it is there. So there's no doubt in your mind that this is modern day slavery. So, you know, the interesting thing about this is that David had done an article about slavery being on the ballots in certain states. And so, you know, again, people ask him, well, why is this an issue? So I'm just going to ask David to talk about the article he did. I think it was back in September on these ballot initiatives, and the fact that slavery persists today under a different name. That's how you led the article off. So talk about those ballot initiatives, and what about the 13th Amendment that we need to be mindful of?
Yes, well, thank you once again for having me on, and I think it's very important that you decided to have us on to talk about this issue. I think it's really something that, you know, people don't reflect on the way they should, or maybe they just don't understand. But yes, as you mentioned, the 13th Amendment is a very important issue, particularly in a country where, you know, we like to call ourselves, well, I don't, but some people like to call America the land of the free. But if you take a really close look at some of our laws and the Constitution, you might have to come up with a different analysis on that. So basically, there are a number of states that will have a ballot initiative next week on Election Day to talk about overturning their state constitution to abolish slavery. So you have Alabama, Louisiana, Oregon, Tennessee, and Vermont. They are going to give voters the opportunity to abolish slavery in their state constitutions. These state constitutions have basically emulated the 13th Amendment. So if you go to the 13th Amendment and read the fine print, actually not so fine print, it's actually staring us right in the face.
Yep.
You know, what that amendment says is that essentially that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So, you know, to put it in simple, down-to-earth terms, the 13th Amendment basically says, yeah, no slavery or involuntary servitude, but if you were convicted of a crime and you're in prison, that's on you. So what that basically means is that this country allows forced labor, slavery under a new name, and it's because of that we can't get it right in this country. We just can't get justice. And you know, I'm thinking back at the Netflix documentary, since we were talking about documentaries, Ava DuVernay back in 2016 came up with this documentary called The 13th that essentially looked at the intersection of race, justice, and mass incarceration, and really focused on the 13th Amendment and the troubling language in that amendment that I just mentioned. And you know, I think ultimately all of the problems that we have experienced in this country, particularly since so-called emancipation, I think it really stems from this problematic language in the 13th Amendment. And, you know, even after slavery, they were still able to come up with these laws where they, you know, locked all the black folks up, put us on these farms, these work farms.
Convict leasing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Convict leasing. Yes, where these corporations were making a lot of money off of us. And, you know, guess what? Same thing is happening right now when you actually still have some of these prison farms that used to be slave plantations but are still actually slave plantations under a different name. And you have, of course, the prison industrial complex, where you have all these companies, these industries making much money off of the imprisonment, mass incarceration of black people, black and brown people, poor people. And that's why in the so-called land of the free, 5% of the world's population is the U.S., but we have 25% of the world's prisoners. So we have the largest prison population in the world in absolute numbers and per capita. And you could thank the 13th Amendment and that loophole, along with, you know, white supremacy, racism, capitalistic greed. And it all really comes together, you know, with a toxic potion that means that, you know, black people are still actually enslaved to this day. So you see some states that are trying to right the wrong, and there's also a federal piece of legislation that would undo that loophole in the 13th Amendment. So as we see, the struggle still continues, and, you know, in the so-called land of free, we ain't really that free.
And see, David, this is an issue for us as a people, because most people don't know what the 13th Amendment says. So it's difficult for you, and when I say you, I mean the collective you, to advocate for prisoners when you have a constitutional amendment. So you can't say, well, you can't do this. Well, these folks are now property of a state. And so you going in there saying they have rights to do bloop, 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 bloop. And they're like, no, they are property of the state according to our Constitution. So when you say this piece is critical to unlocking a lot of the vestiges of slavery, it is indeed that point. So I think, for example, when I just heard a presentation by some students, and I was one of the respondents, and the class is Free the Land, and their project was about parchment in Louisiana. So I know about parchment. I know it's hideous like most of the southern places, but what I didn't know, Timothy and David, is that it is 18,000 acres. I mean, who needs a prison on 18,000 acres? So when you get to thinking about what they're doing on that land, they're farming for all these corporations. They're doing, I mean, so they got a built-in labor force helping to develop 18 acres of land that a prison sits on. So it's, you know, it's mind-blowing on the one hand, but then we are in America. But I do want to ask you, do you know who's pushing the amendments in those states? Like, is this a national kind of movement? And maybe it came out of Ava's, you know, documentary that people like, let's check that out. Do we have that in our Constitution? Like, are there organized groups on the ground that have pushed this?
Yes, it is a grassroots effort where you see activists coming together and trying to enact some change, particularly the abolition movement. You know, people who have been fighting to undo the prison industrial complex. You know, these are the folks that are working on this, and you know, I think it is very important work. And I should also mention that that there are other states like California, Florida, New Jersey, Ohio, Texas, where they're trying to do the same thing. And in addition to that, there have been some other states, like since 2018, Colorado, Nebraska, and Utah voted for similar ballot measures. But, you know, clearly we have a long way to go.
So we do, and as long as that's there, our people are going to be sucked up into the prison industrial complex as free labor, and we'll be standing on the sidelines helpless to advocate for them as full citizens when the Constitution says they're not. So, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Timothy's documentary is that As a result of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Timothy, as a result of the documentary, Mississippi moved to ratify the amendment in 2013. So tell us a little about Mississippi, because when I looked to see which five states were on there, and I'm like, okay, all those southern states need to be in there, and I'm like, Mississippi needs to be number one. And I said, oh, it's not, and maybe this is why. So talk a little bit about the impact that your documentary had on them moving to ratify the 13th Amendment, and what has happened since then?
Well, we believe what happened was Benny Thompson was somewhat of a real close associate of mine. And you'll see in the documentary part of it, we went to Capitol Hill and we spent like a weekend on Capitol Hill. We were supposedly guaranteed an audience with Congressman Thompson because that is in his district.
Absolutely.
We never got that. And we knew that we had to do it at least a week because, you know, they have different things to come up. So if your appointment is made for this day, it may be a week. But his office and himself guaranteed us, oh, yeah, I'm going to definitely do it. But for that entire week, even when I say entire week, I'm talking about a 7-day week.
Exactly.
He never did show up. As a matter of fact, he stopped having conversations. He stopped answering his phone calls. But we kind of, well, personally, I kind of went hard on him with other people like Charles Ogletree, who was also President Obama's one of his main advisors, other than Valerie Jarrett. Those two were his main advisors. And Charles Ogletree has done a whole bunch of things himself. Charles Ogletree, for a lot of people, was Anita Hill. He was Anita Hill's attorney. He did it pro bono. He did a lot of other things pro bono. Charles Ogletree also did a documentary on slavery, believe it or not. But he's not he's not a filmmaker. And you know, we took some film that he did have and put it in our documentary because it was some very unique film that he had.
Very relevant too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But his documentary actually wasn't. You would have to actually be somebody who was somewhat of a geek like me or somebody like that to watch it, you know. And documentaries are kind of hard to watch anyway, especially when they are really middle of the road because they're very educational. Just getting back to what a documentary is supposed to be about. So, you know, we kind of went a little hard on Benny Thompson. And so now you're seeing him doing the thing right now with the riots on
Capitol Hill. January 6th committee. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and I'd like to see what really becomes of that because, you know, politics is a very strange thing. And Capitol Hill is very...
Even stranger.
Right. Yeah.
But I do remember that in, maybe it was in the after, I forget what you, the proper name for it, but the sort of the takes that didn't get included in the documentary. And I remember there was conversation about Congressman Benny Thompson, because one of the questions that came up in our group is, where were the elected officials when all of this is going on? Because this is not like an 1890, it's like 1960. And so I guess my question to you, let's take, you know, Congressman Thompson out of there. What mm-hmm. other folks should we be holding accountable for these kinds of things going on? And if it happened with Sister Miller's family, it's got to be other families, and not just in Mississippi, but in other places. So how do we ferret out these kinds of individualized plantations that have been allowed to operate like this for years after the so-called Emancipation Proclamation?
You know, I kind of don't hold anybody accountable no more. I used to sometimes feel that white people were accountable, and then I felt that we as black people had to be accountable. And I kind of don't take it as neither one of us are accountable anymore. I think that we all just need to realize the truth and get past it, because, you know, we just need to be truthful and we need to love each other. And I know it's sounding strange. I know that's where you didn't want to go. I know that's where you didn't want me to go. But we, you know, if we're going to hold each other accountable, then most of us, not you, not me, but most of us, not David, but most of us, when we say accountable, especially when we're dealing with slavery, and we look at that woman of being raped and all of that documentary, we're going to go to hate, or we're going to go to disliking to the point of almost hate, or we want to lash back out. You know, we want to put people in penitentiary. We want to do the same to them, which there is a faction that they figure if we go to love and we just love each other now, to where we're going to end up doing them like they did us.
So, Timothy, I'm going to push back on that, but I do want to remind anybody that's joining us now, we are talking about modern-day slavery, and we have with us David Love, Executive Director for BlackCommentator.com. He's also a professor at the Rutgers University School of Communication and Information. And we also have Timothy Arden Smith, who, you know, produced this very powerful documentary. See, I don't think people automatically go to hate, but I do think people go to who is responsible and how do we clean this up so that it doesn't happen again, or doesn't happen in variations, or is not some other mutation. And so I'm going to ask David
Jamala, let me reiterate. The reason I said that is because, okay, so what was it, in 2009, I believe, because it was so long ago, but I think in 2009 we did the premiere here in Detroit at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History. A lot of my relatives, they did come and support it and everything, and they are so-called upper echelon people, big-time AKAs and these type of people and big time educators, principals, and all of that. They saw it. They said that we put our slant on it. And I'm like, you're looking at the film. Is it what Tim said? Is it what Tobias said? It's not what we said. This is what they said. This is the reason we're showing you what they are saying. But these people have gone through. And then at the same time, my cousin, who is from Alabama, who is from southern part of Alabama, actually Selma, Alabama, who grew up on, what do they call it back in those days? A farm. They have names for them. They still have names for them now. But she grew up on a farm. And she don't want to realize the truth. In other words, she's better than that now, and slavery does not exist anymore. And you just looked at that just happened. I know I'm trying not to say a name. You just looked at that. That's not me. That's not you. That's this, what these people went through. You can't say that these people are a lie. You know, we need to get, that's why I'm saying, we need to get past that and just look at the truth. If we want to be respected, if we want our ideas and what we believe in want to be respected, first of all, let's make sure it's truthful. And second of all, let's respect somebody else's experience.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think that was the most authentic part about the documentary, that you had voices of people who actually experienced it. So here's the thing that I would say, though. Part of why people resist or deny.
We've been called, I don't know if you saw the last part of the documentary when we did have the Q&A section.
Yeah, I did. I did.
And that was part, some of it, some of the truth came out on it, but you know, we've been so-called, and I'm going to say so-called blackball, because there are some of the artists out here and some of the other filmmakers out here, they've whitewashed it. If you remember, Antebellum just came out not too long. Well, it was the last year, the year before last. Antebellum came out. It was a very good film. It was pretty much identical to The Conflict of Truth in film form. And now hardly anybody knows about Antebellum.
Well, hardly anybody knows about Conflict of Truth either. But I think
The Conflict of Truth is doing very well. I mean, I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, yeah, because when people see it, then they talk about it some more, and then it dies down, and then people start talking about it again. But what I want to say is that people generally deny the truth when it means that they may have to do something. And so I'm going to bring David in here, because I think for modern day slavery to exist, we do have to have somebody accountable, and we have to own the piece that we own. Like, I would love to hold Benny Thompson accountable to see what he thought about when this was happening under his watch. Does he have any explanation? Because then when you know it, then you have to do something about it. So David, you're in the information, you know, arena, you hear people, and you're a commentator, you put stuff out there, you hear people give feedback. This issue of abolition, this issue of slavery, this issue of modern day slavery, how are we going to wrap our hands, our heads around it, and our hands and our feet to do something if we don't own it and then start holding people accountable?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, it's all about accountability. I mean, I think that lack of accountability in this country is why we have so many of the problems. I mean, we never really held people accountable for what they did to us for these hundreds of years, and because of that, you know, the problems are not going away. I think ultimately what we have to do is connect this issue of mass incarceration and modern day slavery with the effects that we are still experiencing in terms of all of the trauma that we have experienced you know, with, you know, when it was actual, you know, when it was legal, you know, physical enslavement. We have to connect all of those together, you know, with the movement for reparations.
Let me just end. So reparations and accountability, so I could be understood. Reparations and accountability, that's basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay. I'm correct.
It's a part of it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are many different things that we can look at. I think that reparations, you know, is an absolute necessity. And we're also living at a dangerous time when we see these white nationalists, white supremacists trying to rewrite the history books, trying to change history, trying to disrupt the collective memory and tell people that, you know, this country did not actually experience the things that you think they did. So they're trying to pretend like there was no enslavement, there was no discrimination, no, there is no systemic racism. And I think one of the purposes of that is to simply hide the crime. So, you know, nothing happened, y'all. So, you know, we ain't paying you nothing. I think that's what it's really all about. But we have to fight against that. And, you know, we have to make sure that this is not going away. And frankly, I think that this country, the only way to save this country, if that is actually something that you, you know, believe in.
If it's even salvageable, you mean?
Exactly. If it's even salvageable. But I think that the only way this country is going to save itself, if it can, is if it does right by us and really is held to account for these hundreds of years. And we're not just obviously not just talking about history, but, you know, but we're talking about what's happening to us now.
But I think that's the role of people like us. To put the truth out there. I know I'm not a reporter, so I always say I don't have to be objective. You know, I'm going to tell you what I see and what I know. And for a documentary to be made about modern day slavery is so compelling, because many of us who study history and know about First Reconstruction, we know about convict leasing, we know about the other mutations of slavery. So we believe that some of that still existed. We just could not document it. But here's somebody like Timothy had actually documented to talk to somebody. So I think we have a responsibility to continue to put that out there, to have the discussions about how do we actually eliminate the 13th Amendment, which ought to be part of a broader strategy, because it's not just, I mean, all of our people are not in prison, but all of them are suffering some vestiges of enslavement. So, you know, I think we're doing what we're supposed to do. We're talking about it. This thing, that documentary is almost, 13 years old. And it still has a life. It still has a shelf life. So to me, that means somebody's talking about it. Somebody's, you know, and that's all we can ask people to do right now. But at a certain point, we got to be moved to action. What else can we do besides talk about it? Who can we hold accountable?
and on a personal note, I kind of try to leave my personal beliefs out of a lot of things. But personally, I'm totally for reparations, because reparations mean repair. And what have been done to blacks needs to be repaired. And then as those weird and crazy politics come into play about where did slavery start.
You know, sometimes I remember growing up, and it was like, oh, well, we were sold by black kings. Well, but where did it start? Where did all that whole thing start? And that, I'm not going to go off into that because that's another subject. But, you know, I mean, that's part of the, I think the love will answer a lot of things, because in order to repair, I think that we all need to get to love. And you know, love is a very powerful word, just like hate is a very powerful word. That's just me personally. I mean, I don't think it's, I think that things could be solved very basically. I kind of learned that through May Louise Miller, too, because there was a part of it was like, well, you know, we asked her, you know, do you hate those people that rape you and stuff? And she was like, no. And she really meant that. And she explained why. You know, you can watch the documentary and she'll tell you why. It's like, that makes all the sense in the world.
But I think one of the things with healing and getting to the other side of the pain, there has to be some admission that something happened. Oh, you did something to me. And that's why I'm in pain. And so I think that's the place where we are right now about enslavement and slavery and the continuation of it, because it's not going away. And so it's up to us to let our people know that when we see manifestations of it, this is part of slavery. This is enslavement in a different way. And so that's why I can appreciate David's whole piece about, you know, slavery persists today, just got another name, and we got to keep letting our people know that.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, it's still here.
Yeah,
it's still on
yeah,
the
yeah.
We're still on the plantation.
So, David, I was going to ask David, in his classes, are you all having conversations about slavery and manifestations of slavery?
Oh, yes, by all means. I mean, even in courses that, you know, don't deal directly with slavery, I make sure to put a racial justice lens into everything that I do. So, you know, I inform my students, and students are, you know, variety of racial and ethnic backgrounds, very, very diverse group of students. I let them know about this history and how it affects people today, because I know that a lot of students don't learn about all of this. And then, you know, as a journalism and media studies professor, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, these students, when they graduate, they're going to go out here and they're going to cover stories about prisons and about, you know, racial inequality, discrimination, things like that. And if they don't have this context, if they don't have this understanding, then how are they going to report in any effective way on all of these issues that are so important to us? So that's why it's important to me that these students understand this history of enslavement, Jim Crow, institutional racism.
And David, don't you find that you have a lot of gaps to fill? I was talking to a African American history professor, and she, one of the pieces of her syllabus was lynching. And she had students, both black and white, that never knew that the lynchings were public. They were public spectacles. So she had the, you know, the postcards and all of that, and they were just shocked. But here we are in the 21st century, and we still don't have a comprehensive view of what happened to our people. So it's, to me, it's overwhelming sometimes, and I just feel for folks who are trying to teach the history. And you, first of all, you got to undo what they've learned because it's been messed up, and then you got to impart the real truths. And so that could hit all up against their principles, their morals, their religious backgrounds, and all of that, and not get to the place that of love that, you know, Timothy is talking about.
Yes, and I'll say that if people don't know the history, they may very well be condemned to repeat it, and we're repeating it as we speak anyway. But I also want to thank Timothy for this documentary, because you know I really think that the media, particularly you know, documentaries and film, can be a very potent tool to really expose what's going on and to really, you know, seep into the consciousness of people. So I think that, you know, that's a very powerful thing.
And I really want to, you know, echo that, because I think, again, we suspect that some of that is going on even still. Just don't have the wherewithal to know how to document it, and now it's been documented. And anybody that's getting close to somebody like a Congressman Thompson, if you get a chance, ask him why there's been no response from his office on this issue. And it's not that you're trying to point fingers at people, but you really just, I'm just curious, like, what did you not know it? Because if you didn't, then that's understandable. But if you knew it and didn't do anything, that's different.
Can I kind of give you a scenario?
Okay, sure.
Okay. So one of the main ingredients in plastics is soybean. Soybean replaced the cotton fields. The majority of cotton that's in Mississippi has been replaced, and Alabama, has been replaced by the soybean. And like I said, soy is the main ingredient in plastics. Plastics are like one of the main ingredients in computers, in warfare, bombs, in planes, in everything. It's like one of the biggest ingredients out right now. That's the Benny Thompson area. Benny Thompson, even though he is a member of Congress, he has a boss. The President of the United States is the CEO of the United States. The President has a boss. So they work for certain people or certain entities, put it like that. And it's a thing that George Wilson was telling me about when I asked him about it. He was like, there's a thing called Heat from the Streets. George Wilson he's passed away now, but he was on Capitol Hill for, everybody knows him on Capitol Hill, the Senate and both sides of the Hill. So he really knows, he really knew his stuff. And it's a thing called Heat from the Streets. No matter what people may think, and I'm not, you know, about Obama and everything, but it's about heat from the streets. So they say, well, Obama did this for these people and Obama did that for these people. Well, you look at everything that Obama did, he got heat from the streets. In other words, there were people outside protesting on Capitol Hill, outside of the White House. That is heat from the streets. Every day they're out there. And when that happens, then these CEOs or these Benny Thompsons, they can go back and they say, look, we got to do something about this, because those people are going to stay out there until they get answers. And if they don't get any answers, they're going to bring the heat from the streets. So I'm not saying that it's Benny Thompson's, that he maybe should get it, because I've learned a lot of things then, because I was angry. I'm just human. I was angry. My son was angry. We were angry with a lot of things. But you know, as you get, time will bring on, and you keep asking questions, and if you're open to the answers, even that you may not want to hear them, then you will find out some truth. Well, my question is, do we need to, going back to this four-letter word again, I don't think that we love each other enough right now, because if we loved each other, if black people loved each other, then we would be in a different situation than what we're in right now, especially economically. It's like this. I have to live off investments now. I tried my best for a number of years to have black people invest with me into these companies. You know, they told me, oh, I can't trust you. I don't want to invest you. I'm like, you're not trusting me. You're trusting yourself. this investment is through the bank. I can't steal your money. But that same black person will go and they will invest with a white company that take the, and actually it was my cousin, and he lost a whole lot of money, a whole lot of money by going in to invest with this white company. And then he came back to me, man, you told me I was going to lose my money. I was like, you could have lost your money, you could have gained some, but more likely you were going to lose your money, because that's what they do. And they advertise to this very day on television.
So because we only got a couple of minutes left in the show, but I'm going to let David have the last word in terms of how do we get to love through, you know, internalized oppression, through the enslavement process, to really get to the love of each other.
That's a deep question.
I want us to end on a positive, upbeat note.
I tried to get away from it.
Yes, I think that ultimately we have to come to terms with all the pain, because what we're experiencing now is a manifestation of all the pain. I agree completely with what Timothy says in terms of love and us loving each other and the need to love each other. Ultimately, we're going to get out of this, but it's going to be through love and making sure that we get the things that we want and need, including this whole situation with modern-day slavery and getting out of this modern-day enslavement.
Which includes, you know, wages that are less than livable and all of that. That's still part of the vestiges of slavery. I want to thank my guest today, Timothy Arden Smith. He's a filmmaker extraordinaire, bringing us the cotton picking truth about slavery. And if you haven't got it, go to Amazon. It's not expensive. Get it. Have a viewing party with your friends and family. And we also have Dave Love here with us, who is executive editor of blackcommentary.com. He's also a professor at the University School of Communications and Information at Rutgers. Thank you all so much for being with us and tackling this very complex issue, because, as you know, it has layers, because it's been going on for 500 years. So we couldn't possibly do justice to it here, but we have scratched the surface, and we have some resources that we can go to. You can go to read David's article about those states that are going to be trying to abolish slavery, and watching the news next Tuesday to see if it passed. And then you can go to check out the documentary that Timothy has put together. Next week, my guest will be Jeribu Hill. Jeribu is the founder and executive director of the Mississippi Workers Center. She is also the family attorney for the Emmett Till family. And so she's going to be talking about, you know, the legal stuff with that case. And maybe by then some of us will have watched got to see the movie. But Jeribu Hill will be our guest next week. I want to again thank you for joining us today to tackle on this subject. And we will see you next week, same time, same place.
And thank you very much for having us on.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.